Hi, my name is Pete Redden. Welcome to The Way I Taught It, next level aviation knowledge in microbursts. Welcome to another edition of The Way I Taught It. I'd like to thank our sponsor. Oh wait, we don't have one. If you'd like to sponsor an episode or a season of The Way I Taught It, let us know. We'd greatly appreciate it. We've reached over 17,000 downloads and we're climbing. Contact us at VaporGlobalAviation@gmail.com. All one word, VaporGlobalAviation@gmail.com. On with today's discussion, CFI initial exam prep. Today will be fast and furious. I apologize up front, but there is a ton to get through. And by about a third of the way in, I think you'll get the gist of the principles involved for the CFI initial exam prep. For any FAA practical exam, you must prepare, prepare, prepare. Let's define scenario-based training first. And I think defining this will help set up how you approach your CFI initial exam, your initial CFI exam. Scenario-based training starts with ground training and learning the rote memorized things out of the airplane flying handbook, the pilot's handbook of aeronautical knowledge, the FAR, the AIM, and most importantly, the pilot's operating handbook or the airplane flying manual for the airplane that you're flying. Scenario-based training starts with ground training, basic ground training. Once we have the knowledge, we now need to move to application. We need to move to correlation, understanding. So the way we do that is we sit at a table and we talk about different scenarios that you may see to apply your now rote memorized knowledge. So for instance, everyone knows 91205, day equipment, night equipment, IFR equipment. But do you know how to apply that if you are given a scenario where the airplane has inoperative equipment or an inoperative system? Well, now you need to go to 91213. And how does that apply? And that starts out one-on-one ground training across a table with scenarios. And then once we have those basic scenarios down and we have the principles and the concepts down of understanding and comprehension, then we move to the airplane. And when those scenarios develop in the airplane, now you can identify them during the flight training portion, and you already have ground knowledge, ground understanding, ground comprehension of that. And now you can draw from that, those ground scenarios. Good step, if it's available to you, is the simulator. Go from the ground training to the simulator to train scenarios, and then to the flight training. And I'll encourage you to ensure that the flight training is taking care of the stick and rudder skills first, and the ground training is what is focusing on the scenarios primarily. And then as the scenarios come up during the stick and rudder training, your learner has the ability to understand those and work their way through them as the pilot in command. Let's talk about special emphasis areas real quick. In every exam, examiners have to evaluate, make sure they cover in some way, shape, or form special emphasis areas. There's 16 of them. They're in the flight instructor PTS in the preamble. You can look them up online. I'm not going to go through all of them, but as you are preparing for your CFI exam, your initial CFI exam, make sure you look through these special emphasis areas and include them in your lesson plans where appropriate so that you are demonstrating that you not only know what the special emphasis areas are, but you are incorporating them into your lesson plans. Also know as you're preparing for your CFI initial exam, you need to know what an authorized instructor is for the initial CFI. That's covered under 61195 hotel. There are specific requirements for flight instructors doing the initial ground training and the initial flight training, first-time CFI applicants. And you are a first-time CFI applicant all the way through the process until you get that flight instructor certificate the first time. And then after that, you are no longer a first-time applicant. I'm going to quote here from the CFI PTS. Throughout the applicant's training, the flight instructor is responsible for emphasizing the performance of and the ability to teach effective visual scanning, runway incursion avoidance, collision avoidance procedures, and land and hold short operations. These are not optional on really any exam, but they're certainly not optional on the CFI exam. You can't say, oh, I'm going to teach my student not to accept land and hold short operations. Not an option. You have to know how to teach these. Collision avoidance throughout the CFI exam must be taught and demonstrated. And when I prepare my applicants, I tell them to incorporate it. Hey, do it on the teach it on the ground, teach it on departure, teach it during cruise, teach it during the performance maneuvers and the ground reference maneuvers, and then teach it entering the traffic pattern. So a couple of different times throughout the exam, make sure that you're teaching runway incursion avoidance, collision avoidance, effective visual scanning. You have to demonstrate that. These all come out of Advisory Circular 90-48, the Airplane Flying Handbook, the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, and the Airman's Information Manual. Make sure as you create your lesson plans that you are using these source documents that we mentioned, and then you're referencing them and saying, out of the Airplane Flying Handbook, we have this technique. Out of the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, we have this technique. So that the examiner knows that your information is grounded in FAA source documents and not just what you overheard somebody say at the airport. So let's get into the fundamental areas of operations, the tasks. And these tasks are, I'm only covering the tasks that are highlighted by the CFI PTS that must be done, that must be covered by the examiner. This is not the minimum requirement. These are just the tasks that the PTS calls out that says the examiner must cover these tasks during the exam, plus a plethora of other exam tasks to create a legal and complete exam. So these are the ones that must be covered in addition to a whole bunch of other ones. Again, this is not the minimum requirements, but these are the curveballs, if you will. Let's call them fastballs. These are the fastballs that you know are going to be on the exam that you should be 100% prepared for without a shadow of a doubt. And these should come across golden platinum presentation because you've had so much time to prepare for them because you knew they were coming from day one of private pilot training. So the under fundamentals of instructing, area of operation one, task E, instructor responsibilities and professionalism, must be covered. This comes out of the FAA's Aviation Instructor's Handbook. That is your guide through this task. Of course, with a bunch of inputs from a lot of instructors in how to do this. But we're going to talk about helping students learn, providing adequate instructor, standards of performance, minimizing student frustrations, the physiological obstacles for students to overcome during flight training, ensuring student ability, professionalism, evaluating student ability, exams, and professional development. You're going to get into things like, what is the definition of learning? Well, it's a change in attitude and behavior towards a subject after training has been given. How do I know it's in a positive manner? Well, we have to go to standards of performance, and those standards come out of the ACS. If we're tracking towards this ACS standards, we're having good learning. If we're tracking away from the ACS standards, we're having bad learning. Minimize student frustrations. Think about those scenarios that you're going to run into as a flight instructor. Students have frustration with landing. Students have frustration with radio calls. Students have frustration sometimes just starting a hot engine on a hot day. Think about those points that you had frustrations during, and then teach to those frustrations so you minimize them. What do you do if the student becomes frustrated? Should you continue the lesson? Should you stop the lesson and go into a ground lesson? Or should you just stop flight training at the whole time or for the whole day and just go, you know what, today we're just going to take a break. We're going to walk away. We're going to come back tomorrow fresh and we're going to start anew. So how are you going to handle those? If you're in the traffic pattern and you're frustrated, are you going to go out to the practice area? If you've been frustrated in the traffic pattern for three lessons, maybe move on to a cross-country lesson. If your syllabus allows that, do something different. Do something a little more interesting and less threatening. The student is always in learning mode, so you can take advantage of that and go, we're going to leave the pattern behind today and we're going to go do a cross country. What are the things you have to do to develop professionally? Yeah, you got to have your flight review. You got to renew your flight instructor certificate. You got to have your 90-day currencies for your commercial pilot certificate. You have to read and learn outside of all that stuff to become and consistently become a better flight instructor. It's not about the time building. There, I said it. It's not about the time building. You got to stay in the books once you receive that flight instructor certificate. All right, on to the technical subject areas, area of operation two. You are going to be required to discuss, per the PTS, and teach runway incursion avoidance. Runway incursion avoidance has 17 topics that must be covered under the PTS. And I see a lot of applicants turn runway incursion avoidance into a discussion about taxiway signage and lighting. Those are two separate things, and taxiway signage and lighting are part of runway incursion avoidance, but that's not the whole thing. We have to cover, and I'm doing this real quick, I know, read the PTS, taxi route planning, discussion of hotspots, how to steer and maneuver an airplane. Yeah, talk about the rudder pedals, the nose wheel steering or lack of nose wheel steering, differential braking, normal braking, the importance of hold short lines, ensuring that pilot maintains strict focus on the movement of aircraft. Don't do checklists while you're in the middle of taxiing. Eliminate all distractive activities. You're not on your phone, you're not making a phone call, you're not conversations with passengers. Hold the pilot's workload to a minimum during taxi operations, recording taxi instructions, reading back taxi clearances, how to use the airport diagram from parking to the runway, and then once again, briefing the airport diagram and the expected taxi route on the descent and then your approach to landing. Hey, we're going to get off at this taxiway. We expect this taxi route to parking. Hopefully you get that. And if you don't, how do you overcome the bias of what you expect versus what you were cleared? Maintaining and enhancing situational awareness. Basically, get your eyeballs outside of the aircraft and not inside the aircraft while you're taxiing. Procedures for briefing a landing rollout when the exit from the runway will place the airplane in close proximity to another runway, which may result in a runway incursion. What are the appropriate landing and taxi procedures in the event that the aircraft is between two runways on a taxiway? Does it fit? Does it not fit? Have you reviewed the airport facilities directory or have you reviewed the chart supplement and figured out, hey, if I pull off on this taxiway, will I fit? Yeah, I know it's a 172, it's a Piper Archer, it's a Citabria. I know it's small, but the whole goal here is for us to move through to larger aircraft eventually. How do you prevent runway incursions at a non-towered airport versus a towered airport? What about night operations? What about exterior lighting? What about low visibility operations? Basically, when I think low visibility operations, I think runway incursion avoidance during special VFR clearances, runway incursion avoidance when you are told or come upon an ILS hold short line and you're either told to hold there or the weather might be below 800 foot ceilings or two statute mile visibility. And how do you identify that? And how do you go, okay, I'm departing on a special VFR clearance, but now I know the weather's not conducive to VFR, so I need special VFR, and I need to know that I got to hold short of the ILS critical area. Again, your references for that are going to be Advisory Circular 9048E, the pilot's role in collision avoidance, 9173B, procedures during taxi operations, the airplane flying handbook, the pilot's handbook of aeronautical knowledge, the flight instructor's handbook. So all these source documents that you have to kind of cobble together to answer the questions on all these required tasks. If you go to an exam and you don't cover all 17 points, you now put the examiner into a mode where they now have to evaluate, are you just nervous and you didn't cover these topics, but you do know them? Or did you just not know these topics applied to runway incursion avoidance? You didn't prepare for it. And now I have to make a judgment decision on whether you should be a flight instructor or not. Task M, logbook entries and certificate endorsements. references, Part 61, Advisory Circular 6165, FAA Chief Counsel Legal Interpretations. I know for some of you this might be new. Google search FAA Chief Counsel Legal Interpretations. It should bring up on the first line, Interpretations Search, Federal Aviation Administration. You click on that and you are going to want to search some very specific legal interpretations as a flight instructor. So let me give you those quickly. You're going to want to search Glenn 2009, Thoreau 2010. That's Tango, Hotel, Echo, Romeo, India, Alpha, Uniform, Lima, Tango. Thoreau 2011, Sun 2011, Kuhn 2014, Ord AOPA 2018, Granis 2016, and Jablecki 2016. These legal interpretations you're going to want to have on hand because they are super important to qualify commercial applicants for the commercial exam. So you really have to get into those, understand those, and understand the history and understand the chronological order of those legal interpretations. Understand that when you do Task M, you will get scenarios, you will get asked questions. You need to prepare to be able to talk about the initial pilot certification for either private or commercial. You have to be able to talk about the preparation and endorsements and logbook entries for additional pilot certifications. So you're a private pilot airplane, single engine land. Now you want to be private pilot airplane, multi-engine land. Additional aircraft qualifications. So same thing. So pilot certification is private pilot to commercial pilot. Additional aircraft qualifications would be airplane single engine land and airplane multi-engine land. What are the required endorsements for a flight review? What are the required flight instructor records? So there's five things there that you have to be prepared to do. And they all are going to be they're not nebulous, but they're very straightforward. What happens if you want to do a tailwheel endorsement? What if you want to do a high performance endorsement? What if you want to do a complex endorsement? You really need to focus on that. Task M is really one of the linchpins of the CFI exam. You know it's coming. It must be covered. And if you come ill-prepared for Task M of Area of Operation 2, Technical Subject Areas, that's probably one of those, there is no grace. If you can't do the administrative work as a flight instructor, you cannot be a flight instructor. We're going to move on to Area of Operation 4, pre-flight lesson on a maneuver to be performed in flight. Okay, I see a lot of people, a lot of applicants come and all they do is cover the four things under this task. When in reality, you really need to cover the four things under this task. And when it says giving an accurate, comprehensive oral description, including the elements of common errors, using instructional aids as appropriate, you really need to now go from Area of Operation 4 to the selected task in the PTS. So let's just say you're going to do power on stall. Well, you have to cover all the things in Area of Operation 4 for power on stall. You have to cover all the things that are required by the CFI practical test standards for power on stall in your presentation. And then you have to make the decision, are we doing it to a private pilot level or to a commercial pilot level? What was the scenario I was given? And then you need to incorporate everything in the applicable ACS into your pre-flight lesson on a maneuver to be performed in flight. You may not just do one, you may do two, you may do three. So make sure you are prepared for all maneuvers that you may have to accomplish in the ground portion. Make sure that you're covering what's in the airplane flying handbook. Make sure you're covering what's in the CFI PTS for that maneuver, and make sure you're covering what is in the applicable private or commercial ACS for that maneuver based on the scenario that you received. This is an in-depth ground discussion. Moving on to Area of Operation 10, ground reference maneuvers. You must accomplish task delta, which is 8s on pylons, on the CFI exam, the initial exam for single engine land. You must do this task. So you must be prepared for it. There should be no questions from the examiner because you know that the practical test standards demand that this ground reference maneuver is covered. You might do others and you have to be prepared for those, but this one should be at that high level, well practiced, ready to present and prepared for because you know you're going to do it. One small tip on the 8s on pylons. If your first maneuver during the 8s on pylons when you're entering, if you are diving or lowering the nose to catch your pylon, you're probably starting the maneuver too early and you're not letting the pylon, you're not flying straight and level long enough to let the pylon hit your reference line before initiating the bank. If you look at the airplane flying handbook and its graph or its picture, pictorial, you'll see that the first maneuver should be slowing airspeed and rising altitude. And the reason why this is important is because we're supposed to maintain at or below maneuvering speed. So if we enter at maneuvering speed and our first pitch action is to pitch down, we're going to go above maneuvering speed, which could be considered a safety of flight issue because we're supposed to be at or below maneuvering speed on the entry, and we should be at or below maneuvering speed throughout the whole maneuver, well, because we're maneuvering. So just a little tip there. Moving on to area of operation 12, basic instrument maneuvers. This seems to catch about 25 to 35% of the applicants off guard that yes, you are going to wear foggles on your CFI initial check ride. Yes, you are going to teach basic instrument maneuvers, turns, climbs, descents, unusual attitudes, some portion of those, maybe only one of those, but basic instrument maneuvers are required on the CFI exam. So if it's been a while since you've done those, you may want to review them with your flight instructor. Area of operation 13, emergency operations. Okay, everybody knows that you're going to get the emergency approach and landing. You must be able to teach from the point that you decide as the instructor that you're going to simulate the engine failure. You must be able to teach all the checklists that are required, and usually there are 2 or 3. So you have the initial power loss and restart. You have, it doesn't restart, now I need to secure. I need to make all my radio calls. I need to squawk 7700. I need to make sure that I make my airport or my field that I've selected. I have to manage my energy. I have to make sure that I keep everything in a very safe and controlled manner as the flight instructor while I'm teaching all of the things to do. I got to reference my checklists. Yeah, you can do them from memory, but at some point you have to reference them. And then you have to teach the applicant, or in this case, the simulated learner, that's the evaluator, how to do all of this and then recover prior to either 500 feet AGL, sparsely populated area, or 1,000 feet AGL in a populated area. Please try and do these away from populated areas. I know we don't all have the luxury of thousands and thousands of acres and hundreds of miles of farmland around us, but try and find that proper area to do this. Make sure you at all times you can make that landing area, because if your engine truly does quit while you're teaching your student how to do this, we should always be in a position to make that. One little tip here, teach to fly to your field or your airfield or your road or wherever you're going to land the airplane in this scenario. Fly to it. Don't fly around it. Don't make big circles. Get to it. Get over it. And then either fly a rectangular pattern or fly a constant radius turn, descending turn, until you reach maybe an altitude about 1,500 feet above the ground. And you want to kind of favor the corner of the pattern that is downwind to base. So that way you can either do downwind base final and make it look like a normal pattern. Or if you are running out of energy, you can make a just base to final. So make it look like what a learner already knows. Make it look as normal as possible Once you glide to your field, your selected field, now use circles, gliding circles, descending circles, almost like steep spirals, but not steep per se, to manage your altitude, and then try and do that downwind base final or base final. So you give your learner very familiar energy management positions as they learn how to land in a field. Make sure you're referencing the airplane flying handbook. Make sure you're referencing the POH during that. Now, here's another one that I would say about 50% of the applicants are kind of surprised that this task B, systems and equipment malfunctions, is covered as in-depth as it is. I have probably some bias being a former military pilot in how scenario-based training works, how I view systems and equipment malfunctions, how I view training those, how I view using checklists, how I view how these should be taught. But bottom line, as a flight instructor, there are 12 systems and equipment malfunctions in the CFI PTS, five of which must be evaluated during the check ride. Going back to our definition of scenario-based training, you can imagine that as an examiner, we take on a lot of risk. We are flying with basically strangers, and we are trying to assess during the ground portion, is this person safe enough to fly with? Throughout the entire exam, any knowledge portion of any task can be evaluated. A technique that I use as a flight instructor with my flight instructor candidates is to cover these on the ground. I cover them on the ground. I give them the scenarios. You might be on the ground. You might be in flight. You might be on an initial takeoff. You might be in the traffic pattern. You might be at cruise. And how are we going to work through all of these systems and equipment malfunctions in a logical manner, making sure that we reference the checklist in the POH or the AFM? Now, I know some of you go to flight schools and you have SOPs and you have quick reference checklists and you have all these things that were generated by your flight school. Absolutely use them, but make sure somewhere along in your training, you're taking those checklists and those SOPs and you're comparing them to the airplane flying manual for your airplane or the POH, and make sure that those generated procedures by your flight school match or parallel the required procedures for the POH, because your examiner is going off what's in the POH. We don't know what your flight school does. We don't know what your SOPs are. So we're going to go off of the direction that we receive from the PTS and the ACS, which is the AFM or the POH. So make sure those are pretty close. If there's differences, we'll teach the differences and why. That's why you're a flight instructor. But remember, there's 12 of these and we have to pick five, and we have to go, and you have to be able to teach how you would do that. Now, a technique I use is maintain aircraft control, analyze the situation, take the appropriate actions, and land as soon as conditions permit. If you take those four things, you can break down any emergency. So let's just do a simple one. Let's just say we had an engine failure on takeoff roll and we had to abort. Okay, so you have an engine failure. Maintain aircraft control. I'm gonna keep the airplane going straight down the runway and I'm gonna apply the brakes. I'm gonna bring the throttle to idle. Analyze the situation. Okay, my engine has stopped making noise. My propeller has stopped rotating. The oil pressure is zero. The fuel pressure is zero. The engine temperature the engine oil temperature is cooling off. I've obviously had a significant deceleration because the prop stopped. Okay, so I have an engine failure on takeoff roll. So I've analyzed the situation. Now I'm going to take the appropriate actions, which is apply the memory items for abort, which I've already started to do. I'm going to start applying my brakes. I'm going to bring the power to idle. I may bring the mixture to idle cutoff because I don't know if I have an engine failure or engine fire. Is there smoke? Is there fumes? What is there? And land as soon as conditions permit. So I'm already on the ground. I never took off, but I do need to egress the airplane if there is fire or reason to egress the airplane. And if I don't make it off the runway with the momentum that I have, if I come to a stop on the runway, I need to make some radio calls and let people know that I'm stuck on the runway without power. I may need to shut my ignition off, my master switch off, shut off all the electrics. You know, now I need to hop out of the airplane. Hopefully somebody's with me and I got to push it off of the runway. If you can give all that information and teach that information, it's very obvious that you have thought through these scenarios and you know what you need to teach your applicant, your student, your learner to successfully deal with systems and equipment malfunctions. So I know that was fast and furious. I hope you can go back and listen to it a few times. I do apologize for it, but there's just so much information on the CFI initial. I just hope that these chunks will help you prepare for it better. And then you can take what you learned from this podcast and these specific tasks that must be covered on the CFI initial exam and apply those to all the other tasks that may be asked by your examiner on the exam. Again, my name is Pete Redden. This is The Way I Taught It. We're looking for sponsors. Contact us at vaporglobalaviation@gmail.com. That's all one word, vaporglobalaviation@gmail.com.